From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. The North Carolina Fisheries Reform Act will be 20 years old this August. As we learned last week, that policy came to be after extended and heated debate from stakeholders on all sides of the issue. Most of those involved at the time described it as better than nothing, but most definitely a compromise. As stakeholders make the case for an update of the law, the North Carolina General Assembly has become ground zero for maneuvering. Today, we're going to learn about proposed legislation, what's at stake for commercial and recreational fishermen, and why even the science around fisheries management is the target of debate. The North Carolina Division of Marine Fisheries is responsible for the stewardship of the state's marine and estuarine resources. The division's jurisdiction covers all coastal waters and extends to 3 miles offshore. A 9-member Marine Fisheries Commission establishes policies along with the Department of Environmental Quality. Sammy Corbett is chairman of the Marine Fisheries Commission, and he is with us now. Sammy Corbett, welcome to Coastline.
How are you doing today?
Good to have you here. And we're inviting your questions on this Wednesday. How would you like to see fisheries managed in North Carolina? You can call us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Sammy Corbett, before we get into what's at stake and how this debate has really kind of positioned itself, I want to understand for those folks who haven't been following it, what the Division of Marine Fisheries really is, how that policymaking body works. As the chair, we know there are 9 members on it. Who do those 9 members represent?
Okay. Well, we have, like you said, we have 9 seats. 3 of those are recreational. One of those has to derive 50% of their income from the recreational industry. One of them has to be from the coastal area of North Carolina, and then one has to be from the inland area of North Carolina. Then when we come to the commercial side, I sit in the dealer processor seat. I have a dealer's license, a little fish house, but I'm also a full-time commercial fisherman. Then the other seat, we have a coastal seat, which is 50% of your income has to be derived from commercial fishing. And then we have like a northern seat, and also 50% of your income or your spouse's income has to be derived from commercial fishing. So say if I wasn't a fisherman and my wife was, and she made 50% of her income, I could sit on. And then we have 2 at-large seats. And the at-large seats, one is a coastal and one is a more of an inland representative seat. And then we have a scientist seat. And so that's the makeup of it.
So there's 1 scientist on the panel, 3 recreational reps, 3 commercial reps.
And 2 at-large.
And 2 at-large. And who do the at-large people represent? Just the geographic areas? Or is there some other interest there?
They do. We've had, in the past, we've had commercial fishermen that sat in those seats. Right now we have recreational fishermen sitting in those seats. So those are the seats that probably kind of control what happens with the commission more so, because, if you got 3 and 3 and you've got a scientist who is hopefully looking at the data and trying to do what's right by that. So a lot of times it gets down to those 2 seats as to what's going to happen.
And you are, as all this legislation is turning around in Raleigh, you're also looking down the barrel of the end of your term and mm-hmm. wondering if you're going to be reappointed. You were initially appointed by Governor Pat McCrory.
Right. And so now in June, myself and Joe Shute, who is the recreational industry seat, and then the scientist, Mike Wicker, our terms come up in June. And so, the governor will have a option of putting who he wants in there. He may want to keep some of us. We don't know. A lot of times a governor does want to have his own chairman in there. So, that's one of those things that, And if you had a crystal ball, you might could figure it out, but but you're really not going to figure it out, you know, until they make that decision.
Now, you were appointed by a Republican governor. Mm-hmm. You are a commercial fisherman. Is there an aligning of Republican and commercial fishing interests, or how does that shake out?
So the same governor that appointed me also, you know, put five recreational fishermen on there. So, you know, with the two at-large seats. So I think it's, you know, it's more of a they get a bunch of names in, and, you know, some of them they might know, some of them they might not know. You know, I was probably picked because of the man who was director at that time. He's no longer there, but Lewis Daniel. He and I have been friends a long time. He had tried to get me to do this for a long time, and so he finally caught me at a weak moment.
There appears to be so much positioning and lobbying going on now. Why now? What's at stake? What's really happening? Why is this changing now after 20 years of having this Fisheries Reform Act in place?
Well, I think that the demographic of the fishing industry has changed. You know, 25 years ago, we probably had 25,000 commercial fishermen in the state, and we probably had somewhere less than 100,000 or maybe even less than that recreational fishermen, you know, because I grew up on Wrightsville Beach, so, you know, I've seen it for a long time. And so now we've got, there's 6,000 commercial licenses that are issued, but there's only 2,800 of them that actually have a trip ticket, and a trip ticket you have to have if you actually caught fish. So you're talking about you went from 25,000 25 years ago to 2,800, and now the recreational industry has gone from somewhere less than 100,000 years ago to 1 million now. So, you know, the fishery is changing. People want to catch more fish. Most people grew up, you know, that are on the coast now grew up in Raleigh and Charlotte and Garner, wherever. They grew up on their daddy's farm pond or their granddaddy's farm pond, and they'd had brim in it, and every time they dropped a line in the water, they caught a fish. And so they moved to the coast, and they expect it to be that way. And, you know, this is a big pond out here. They got fins and tails. They go where they want to.
And what kind of fish are we talking about? When the Division of Marine Fisheries looks around at fish that North Carolina is supposed to have policies about, what fish are we talking about?
We have a lot of fish that we regulate policy on that are offshore fish that are federally regulated. Then most of the fish that we have that are just state regulated would be like your flounder. We do have a lot of people concerned about red drum, but that is a federally regulated fish. The quota that the commercial side gets and the regulations that the recreational side have, you know, are from the feds. You know, we adopt those regulations. Speckled trout is something we manage on our own. Virginia mullet, sea mullets, whiting, whatever you want to call them, we manage on our own. Gray trout are managed federally, and we oversee that kind of. And spots and croakers, we use a federal plan for them. We don't have our own plan on those also. So, you know, a lot of the fish that we don't have our own plan on, if you look on the website, you'll see where they're concerned, and people go, oh, well, they're concerned, it's got to be bad. But most of the time the concern is, you know, we just don't know. It's not our stock assessment, so, you know, we don't know what it is.
What are the fish that North Carolina is in charge of managing? You mentioned flounder.
Flounder. We do manage the red drum, speckled trout, Virginia mullet, striped mullets, striped bass, river herring, blue crab, shrimp.
What are the species of most concern at this point? What are the ones that really, if things don't go the right way for these fish, they could be on the way out?
You know, for me, and you'll get different answers from different people. You know, the fish that I see the most stress on still is like river herring, and you know, it's one of the fish that everything in the water eats it. I mean, it's, you know, it's targeted by everything. And a lot of people have concern with spots and croakers, but, you know, our estuaries have filled in so bad, you know, the commercial guys have learned you got to move further offshore. Those fish are moving further off the beach as to where we used to fish in 20 feet of water to catch them. Now we're out in 55 or 60 feet of water to catch them.
And why is that?
Well, we have, you know, our estuaries are filling in from, you know, side cast dredging, beach renourishment. When the sand washes off the beach during the storms, it's going somewhere, you know.
So what is that, when the estuaries fill in, how does that change the habitat for the
fish?
Well,
there's nowhere for them. They have to have water, you know, so we lose our deep water. Look at, I think it's Lockwood Folly Inlet down there now, you know. And, you know, that sand didn't just magically appear. It came from when the storms blew it off the beach. And so
are you finding yourself also then as a commercial fisherman at odds with beachfront communities that want to keep their shorelines intact?
No, because I think that's a necessary thing. That, you know, our tourism is far and away more of an economy for the state. And, you know, most of the crabs I catch are sold, you know, a big portion of them are sold to tourists, you know. So, no, I think that we have to keep doing those things. We just need to look at ways to start maybe dredging some of our creeks and streams inside to get that water back to what it was historically. You know, if we're going to let the sand fill them in, we aren't to be able to go in there and dredge them back out.
If we're going to get into this more in the next segment, but if House Bill 867 passes, how would that change what you do with the commission?
House Bill 867, it takes away a lot of our checks and balances. We have, and I hear your music, so I know we got to go. But we have a secretary of DENR, who is Michael Regan now, and, you know, he has a balance. He can make things happen or not, so we lose that, and the commission would just have whatever they wanted to with it.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM, talking about the current state of fisheries management in North Carolina, what could soon change, what's at stake. When we come back from this break, we'll be joined by representatives from the commercial and recreational camps. If you have your own question about fisheries management in the North Carolina coast or inland waters, you can reach us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or at coastline at whqr.org. The phone lines are now open. You're listening to Coastline. Listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're talking today about the challenges of creating policy to manage fisheries amidst competing interests. With us today is the chairman of the Marine Fisheries Commission, Sammy Corbett. That's the state's policymaking body. Also joining us now by phone is David Sneed. He's the executive director of the Coastal Conservation Association of North Carolina, a group that advocates for marine conservation and recreational fishermen. David Sneed, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rachel. Glad I could be here.
Also with us in studio now is Glenn Skinner, executive director of the North Carolina Fisheries Association, an advocacy group for commercial fishermen. He is also a full-time commercial fisherman. Glenn Skinner, welcome.
Thank you.
And we're taking your questions on this Wednesday about fisheries management in North Carolina. You can call us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. David Sneed, what is the Coastal Conservation Association of North Carolina, and why did it come into being?
Sure, Rachel. Let me tell you, I'll tell you what we are, and I will tell you what our organization is not. CCA was started primarily as a group of recreational anglers and has grown to include conservationists, those folks that are concerned about our public trust resources, primarily our coastal fisheries. And these folks all support sound management of our public trust marine and estuarine resources. Our goal is to protect those resources for the continued use and enjoyment of our current and future generations of all fishermen. And what we are not, and a lot of people try to paint us into this corner, and we are not an anti-commercial fishing organization.
And Glenn Skinner, same question for you as executive director of the North Carolina Fisheries Association. Why did that come into being? What is the purpose of your group?
The NCFA is a trade organization. It was formed, I believe, 1952. And it's to lobby in Raleigh for commercial fishermen, to support commercial fishermen, and to push us forward to grow the industry.
What are commercial fishermen afraid is going to happen at this point? Why do you need to, I think you said to our producer, up your lobbying game?
Recently, we've had a lot of stuff going on in Raleigh. Like you mentioned earlier, House Bill 867 and several other bills. Over the years, there have been several net ban bills, game fish bills that would have taken the gear and the resource away from the commercial fishing industry, and we're fighting to keep our gear in the water, to keep working, to keep providing seafood for the consumers.
So that's a huge part of the support for you and your industry. David Sneed, things like certain kinds of gear, that's something your organization lobbies hard to get rid of or put limits on. Can you talk about gill net issues and why that concerns recreational fishermen?
Sure. What we try to look at, Rachel, is what's best for the resource. And again, we don't want, like I said, the CCA started out as primarily a group of recreational anglers that were concerned about keeping access open. They were concerned about allocation of the resources. Were recreational anglers getting their fair share of the resource? And we've really transformed our organization over the last several years to become a resource-first organization. What we want to do is look at, in the state of North Carolina, we have a lot of troubled fisheries. You know, I know that fisheries management science is not exact, but there are stock assessments that are done, as you and Sammy talked about in the first segment, that show that a lot of these fisheries in North Carolina are in trouble. So what we want to look at is what is best for the resource? What do we need to do to make sure that resource not only survives for future generations of fishermen, but thrives? We
right.
want to see North Carolina become, you know, get back to being that mecca for recreational and commercial
Got
fishermen.
That. You've made that point really well. How do gill nets come into play along, you know, to support that kind of a mission? What do they do that you...
Well, the concern with gill nets has always been the destructive nature of them, the ability... You know, a gill net is a very efficient way to catch fish, but at the same time, it catches anything that swims into it. You've got sea turtle issues, you've got birds, you know, water birds that swim into the nets and get caught and killed. You have discard mortality issues with certain fish that are not targeted. And again, that's something that Sammy and Glenn can speak to more as far as what's targeted using gill nets, but at the same time you're targeting a certain fish, like, say, flounder, you're also catching other fish that may or may not be commercially sold at the time or may not be, of value to them, and they may get discarded because they're the wrong size or they've reached their limits. So there is concern that you have some indiscriminate loss due to the use of that type of gear.
Sammy Corbett.
So a gill net is the most selective gear you have. You take the size net you're going to use, and I'm a gill net fisherman. And in the last 15 years, is probably as far back as I can remember, I have not caught a sea turtle or a shorebird of any kind. And from about September 1 till February, I'm gill netting. So when I want to catch a certain fish of a certain size, I use a certain size net, okay? And that's the size fish I catch. Now, sure, a little one might get his mouth caught in, and I may catch one that's not as big as the others, and I may catch one or two that are bigger than the others. He might get rolled up in it. But for the most part, every fish I catch in that net is pretty much going to be the same size. And so this was the argument I made with Wildlife Federation over the shrimp petition. When they came to my house and sat at my kitchen table and we discussed what was wrong with their petition before I approved it, because they had all their data for it to be approved. I just wanted to give them a chance to correct some errors. So they put a 8 and 10 inch size limit on spots and croakers, and they said they wanted to do that to eliminate dead discards and bycatch. So I explained to them that our sea mullet fishery uses a 1.25 inch net up to 1.375 inch net. And if we left the 1.5/16 and 1.25 inch nets in the water, we would create more dead discards and more bycatch than we would be eliminating in the shrimp boat fishery because those fish catch those are caught in those smaller nets. I said, so instead of an 8 and 10 inch size limit, what you need to do is you need to go to an 1 3/8 minimum mesh size in the state. Raise the mesh size up 2 times. I said, we're all going to complain. I fish with it too. We're not going to like it. In a couple of years, you know, we'll start catching the fish at the amounts we did because the fish will get bigger, and we will not be catching those smaller fish, and they will have a chance to produce. And that's not what they wanted to do. So these organizations love to say that, you know, we want to make the fishing better, but in most cases, they're trying to reallocate who gets to fish, just like House Bill 867 does with the they want to manage by economics. We spend more money to fish than you do, so we should get more fish. Well, it don't sound like to me that that's trying to help the fish. It sounds like it's trying to give more fish to one side over the other.
Okay, David Snead, I'm going to give you a chance to respond in a second. I just want to read this email. Someone says, the fact that is continually overlooked in the debate between commercial versus recreational fishing is no one person has any more of a right to the fish in our coastal waters than any other person. A recreational fisherman may spend $50,000 on a boat, buy all the tackle and magazine subscriptions the lifestyle prescribes, but that gives them no more of a right to our fish than a person living on 18th Street who just wants to buy the occasional spot, crab, or croaker from one of the many seafood houses in our poorer neighborhoods. Nor does it give them more of a right to our fish than a family far inland who wants to enjoy the occasional seafood dinner. The fact is, not all people can afford to partake in the recreational fishing lifestyle, much less pay the parking fees at Wrightsville Beach. David Snead, how would you respond to that?
Well, I got a lot to respond to. let me address, you know, what Sammy said about the way he fished, and he's absolutely correct. And that's an attended gill net. Where the problems come in with a lot of the discard mortalities, and the problem with unintended consequences with the gill nets is when you have unattended nets. Now, House Bill 867 there's nothing in there about resource reallocation. And to your emailer's point, they're exactly correct. What we're trying to say is that these are public trust resources. They belong to all the citizens of North Carolina, regardless of whether you live on the coast, regardless of whether you fish at all. This doesn't have anything to do with asset allocation. The study that Sammy's referring to was done to show the economic value of our total fishing economy in North Carolina. It does not seek to separate out the value of recreational versus the value of commercial to the state of North Carolina. What the study showed was if we changed the way we manage our fisheries and got them back to the historical levels, get them back to the sustainable harvest levels that we've experienced in the past, our total economy in North Carolina could double. Our total fishing economy could go from about $2 billion a year to about $4 billion a year. So this doesn't have anything to do with asset reallocation.
But at some point, David Snead, have you contended that the recreational fishing industry does contribute about 5 times the number of dollars to the North Carolina economy that the commercial fishing industry does?
Well, that's not my contention. I can point you to the U.S. Department of Commerce, and it's kind of ironic. They just came out with their most recent fisheries economics report of the United States, and they're looking at 2015 data. And the numbers are put out by the U.S. Department of Commerce. And it's true in the state of North Carolina, the economic value from recreational fishing is about $1.5 billion, and it looks like the commercial value is about $330 million. But that includes imports. And so, yes, those numbers are out there, but I don't make those up.
Glenn Skinner, commercial fisherman.
Yes, ma'am. First thing I'd like to do is respond to David Snead's comments on House Bill 867. It does specify that the commission, if this bill passes, can use economics for allocation of the resource. It's very clear about that. And it also specifies that the commission would have full control over these decisions and use whatever data they chose worthy. So he's wrong about that. It is very specific about allocation of the resource.
For those folks who haven't been following this debate, explain what allocation of the resource means.
That would mean that the commission would have the authority to say that one user group had more access or total access to the resource versus the other user group. And they've tried this, the CCA has tried this with the game fish bill, tried to get striped bass, speckled trout, and red drum allocated solely to the recreational group. That didn't pass, and this bill is just another way that they hope to eventually get this done.
If it's true that recreational fishing contributes more to the state economy than commercial fishing does, Glenn Skinner, tell us what life is like as a commercial fisherman. What do you catch, and to whom do you sell it? Where does it go?
We catch all sorts of fish. Right now I'm crabbing, so is Sammy. I shed soft crabs. The majority of that goes directly to a fish house, and North Carolina lacks a lot of the process and facilities. A lot of our stuff gets shipped out of state. I do sell some stuff to restaurants that have dealer's license that can buy. But as far as
Why a lot of product gets shipped out of state?
A lot of it is simply because North Carolina does not have processing plants to process the seafood. A lot of restaurants don't want to buy seafood in its natural state, fresh off the boat, and then have to process it. So, and of course, that's changing. We do have a local seafood movement that's changing a lot of that, but that's the reason, one reason a lot of it goes out of state.
Sammy Corbett of the Marine Fisheries Commission.
So I'm a dealer and a fisherman, and like Glenn said, I'm crabbing now, and about 90% of what I catch stays in the state. I have retail markets. I've got crabs sitting in the back of my truck right now that are headed to Fifth and Castle in just a few minutes. And so, you know, most of the stuff, I sell a lot to Atlantic Seafood. It goes on a truck, but it goes to Fayetteville. It goes to Raleigh. It goes to High Point. It goes to, you know, Charlotte. So, you know, some does go out of state, but more, you know, more goes into state that I catch, you know, that stays right here.
David Sneed, Executive Director of the Coastal Conservation Association of North Carolina, Advocacy Group for Recreational Fishermen. You contend that a lot of the product, as Glenn Skinner has just said, doesn't stay in the state and therefore doesn't contribute as much to the North Carolina economy when there's this local food movement. Is that right?
That's correct. You know, our argument is not against commercial harvest. So let's be clear on that. But, you know, what they're talking about is the consumer appetite in North Carolina for seafood can't be met completely by the wild caught, the harvested seafood by North Carolina's fishermen. That's true.
We had a caller, Richard from Wilmington, asked, is it true that North Carolina is the only state in the Southeast that still allows inshore netting? Sammy Corbett.
You know, Florida has a small amount of net they allow. I think South Carolina has a small amount for historical purposes. I'm not sure what Georgia does. But, you know, they don't allow much anymore. But if you look at the red drum stock assessments that our new stock assessments that haven't been posted yet, but they just come back and they've been shown to the commission, you know, our red drum stock is just as good as any of those states that did away with the gill netting. So, you know, and we had a terrible problem with red drum years ago, you know, and the stuff that we put in place, you know, the commission at that time, whoever they were, put in place, you know, it worked well, you know. And the other thing is, you know, like I said earlier, we used to have 25,000 people in this industry, you know, that were directly had licenses. Now we got 2,800. And if we went from 25,000 to 2,800 and could doing away with that many fishermen didn't fix the problem, how is doing away with the last 2,800 going to fix the problem? We need to look at the real problem, like I told you, you know, where the creeks are filling in, we're losing our water, we're losing our habitat, runoff from roads, and, you know, there's a lot of other issues here, but we're the guy that has the least amount of money and the guy that's the easiest to pick on.
We had someone write in and say, this is a very interesting time in Eastern North Carolina politics, and he describes this as kind of positioning the working class against people with more money against the elite class. And then he says, sounds like a liberal argument, does it not? I'm a lifelong Republican, an Air Force veteran, former chair of a county Republican party. He ran for state Senate. So he's saying this is not a political issue, but it is a class issue. Is David Snead, you've said a couple of times that the recreational fishermen don't want to get rid of the commercial fishermen. They're not against that industry. But do you see why, from where they sit, it starts to sound that way?
Yeah, that's always been the argument, Rachel, is that any time you bring up the word conservation and say, you know, we need to do something to help protect the resource, to make sure it's there for future generations, the immediate response is, well, that's just a bunch of greedy, rich recreational fishermen that want all the fish for themselves. And then it goes back to, let's go back to the House Bill 867, for example. I don't know what Mr. Skinner is referring to as far as, you know, allocation by economics. What the bill tries to do is set the scientific data points to give the Marine Fisheries Commission the target that they need to manage to give them the tools to manage to a certain scientific base point, and then talk about harvest and allocation after that. So what you're trying to do is take the politics out of the decision-making. At this point, you've got a group of nine commissioners that whoever screams the loudest at a meeting or has the most people show up for a public comment period thinks that they get to make the decision on how these resources are managed. And instead, it needs to be based on the best available science that we have, and that's what we're trying to give them.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM, and I know both of you had a response to what David Snead just said. Sammy Corbett, we'll hear from you when we come back from this break. It's a conversation about fisheries management in North Carolina, why it's so complicated, and how a 20-year-old law may be ready for a substantial update. David Snead and Glenn Skinner, thank you both so much for joining us today. When we come back from this break, we'll meet two scientists who study the issues around fisheries management. It'll be your last chance to ask your own question. You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. You're listening to Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. It's a conversation about fisheries management in North Carolina, how that could be changing, and why it's so complicated and divisive. We're talking today with Sammy Corbett, chairman of the Marine Fisheries Commission, and joining us now is Frederick Scharf, professor of biology and marine biology at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Welcome, Professor Scharf.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us now is Captain Dave Timpey. He retired from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in 2014. Part of his 28-year career with the Corps was as an oceanographer in Wilmington. He's currently a for-hire charter captain and an avid recreational fisherman, and he is a board member of the Recreational Fishing Alliance. Welcome, Captain Dave Timpey.
My pleasure.
They're answering your questions on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. We're also taking emailed questions and comments at coastline@whqr.org. Professor Fred Scharf and Sammy Corbett, I know you want to get to something that was said in the last segment. We'll get to that in just a second. How do you see the science being used or not used to make fisheries policy in North Carolina?
Well, I think that you know, there's one scientist currently that sits on the Marine Fisheries Commission. And the way things work now is that the Division of Marine Fisheries, their staff biologists present, do an analysis of data, present that data to the commission, and make recommendations for pathways forward, usually present several alternatives with predictions for each of those alternatives. And the one scientist that serves on the commission, I've always viewed that role as being one that should help guide the other commissioners to interpret that data because it's very complex, and help them to make decisions to decide which paths to follow based on the predicted outcomes. I think one of the things that's led to and contributed to the controversies that we have now is just a lack of objective science in the process. I think that the way that the commission is currently constructed, it enables the science to take a back seat in the process. I think one of the things that happened at the federal level about a decade ago was the formation or the formation of a science and statistical committee that were charged with setting up, with making decisions about the catch quotas, and the councils that actually set the management regulations had to abide by those catch regulations, and they determined how they would be allocated both in space and time and among user groups. I think that the state of North Carolina could learn from that model in terms of trying to develop an independent scientific panel that would be independent of the Division of Marine Fisheries so that they could interpret the data and provide that information to the commission.
Sammy Corbett.
So when we were talking about, recreational and commercial, House Bill 867, so when it first came out, the day it came out, I went to Macon phone calls. And so I talked to most of the people who signed House Bill 867. One of them was a local New Hanover County, Ted Davis. Mm-hmm. And I said, so why? Why were you a sponsor of this bill? And he said, because we've been told that this bill will bring the commercial and recreational sides together so they will work together and make this better. And I said, Ted, have you read the bill? There's no way. So you've listened now for what time you've listened from last week till now. Does it sound like to you it's bringing them together?
Not so far.
Okay.
This could be the messy
part.
That's just
all I wanted to say about it.
We'll see. And I do want to get Professor Scharf's point of view, because there have been a couple of issues that have come up here that seem to a layperson like me as if they should be black and white. It's this or it's that. But there's debate on it. But first, Captain Dave Timpey. You're in a really unique situation. You are advocating right now for recreational fishermen, but you have been a commercial fisherman in your lifetime. Can you sort of explain from where you sit why these interests seem so divergent and why you've now gone over to one side specifically?
Let me just say that my main interest is the resource. I don't care about recreational fishermen. I don't care about commercial fishermen. I care about the fish. The Recreational Fishing Alliance consists of a bunch of charter captains on the board that recognize that the fish are in trouble. When I retired, I started charter, and I started listening to the charter captains. I'm a listener. I've listened to these guys. They know what they're doing. They're on the water every day. And I kept hearing the same story every day. Every charter captain I talk to, I keep hearing the same story.
And what's the story?
The bottom line is the traditional management of our fisheries has failed. We need to change. Status quo is not what we need. I think HB 867 is a step in the right direction. Okay, I'm not saying that it does everything we need. In fact, I don't think it goes far enough. But it's certainly a step in the right direction. Status quo is not something we need. We need to do something for the fish. The fish stocks have declined to levels that we have never seen before. If we don't do anything now, we won't have any more fish. We won't have commercial fishermen, and we won't have recreational fishermen to worry about. It's not a user-based problem. The problem is the resource, period.
Professor Scharf. In the last segment, we talked about gill nets as that's just such a great example of what sounds like it should be a black and white issue. They either kill a lot more fish and other kinds of species than they're supposed to, or they don't. And there's a way, as a professional commercial fisherman, that you can get around that. What's the scientist's take on it?
Well, I think that there's no disputing that there was bycatch in gill nets. But there's also good evidence that they can be fished in a way that minimizes that bycatch. In fact, one of the ways that lots of commercial fishermen in this state fish them is they fish them actively, called strike netting, where they set a net and then herd fish into the net, so to speak. And so it's happening in short, as opposed to long-term soaks where the nets are fished overnight. But there's also ways that they can be fished, both in terms of avoiding certain habitats, but more importantly, avoiding certain times of year where bycatch can be minimized. And I've always been a proponent of trying to limit the use of that gear during some of the warmest times of year, based on data that we've collected and in certain studies that we've done, particularly as it relates to the flounder fishery, to reduce bycatch in that fishery, but also to increase yield in the flounder fishery to allow those fish to grow during the summer months when their growth rates are maximized. And so there are, I think there are ways that that gear can be an effective and efficient gear. I think it just requires some careful thought about how it's used.
Sammy Corbett, could commercial fishermen amend the way they use gill nets?
Well, and what Fred's talking about is large mesh gill nets. And we regulate gill nets under large mesh and small mesh, basically. And if you start at New River on the southern side of New River and go down to the South Carolina line, there's only about three places behind Figure Eight Island, one place, small place in Cape Fear River where nets can be left overnight. We lost our, when we became all primary and special secondary nursery areas, we lost the ability to set small mesh gill nets and not attend them. So we have to be with them, you know, and which you heard David Sneed say that, you know, he had no problem with that type of fishery because it was a cleaner fishery. So our small mesh fishery is pretty clean inshore here. And, you know, like Fred says, fish are more stressed in the summertime. You know, there's no doubt. But, you know, by the same token, you know, the fish that you catch on a rod and reel are more stressed in the summertime. And they don't all make it when you're letting them go. And so you run into this, he said, she said, you know.
Which seems like that should be the point the science comes in.
That's where the science comes in. And I do agree with Fred that you know, I would love to see the commission where it was three recs, three commercials, three scientists. You know, I would love, you know, to see that. I think that would be a great thing, and that's kind of like the feds do it. You know, they get from all sides. I sit on the bottlenose dolphin take reduction team, and it's a federal thing, and we're pretty balanced as the people on it, you know.
Is it just getting harder, though, to make a living in North Carolina as a commercial fisherman? Is that a reality that?
I think you got to work harder. I don't think it's any harder for me to make what I make right now than it was, you know, so many years ago. It's just like I said earlier, you know, we're the easy target to get rid of. There's really 2,800 of us left. If we reduce down in 20 some years from 25,000 to 2,800, it's obvious that getting rid of those last 2,800 is not going to fix any of this stuff. You know, so we need to really start looking at what the actual problems are. And as far as all of our fish being depleted, you know, and our numbers being way down, you know, I've got access to every bit of that data, and that's not what I see on all these fish. You know, red drum's better than it's ever been. Speckled trout the last 2 years have been the best they've ever been, you know. So There's a lot of fish out there. Like we said, a lot of them have moved to the ocean now. And there's other factors other than commercial fishermen that are making a move.
Captain Dave Timpey.
Well, I've been fishing for over 50 years, and I can guarantee you that fishing's nowhere near what it used to be. And Sammy, you've agreed with me on that before, and it's clear. I mean, that's based on observations. If you talk to the old charter captains, they'll all tell you the same story. Another thing that's happening in southeast North Carolina is charter captains are going out of business because it's harder to keep clients because we're losing clients to South Carolina. I've talked to some charter captains in Georgetown who've told me that 70% of their clients come from North Carolina. A charter captain told me recently he's booked till August. Call around the local charter captains in Carolina Beach and Wrightsville Beach and see how far out they're booked. I think, you know, if you see more than 2 weeks, you might be lucky. I mean, the charter captains in our area are in trouble. They're having, like Sammy said, they're having to work harder because the fish are not nearly as abundant as what they should be.
So when we look at issues like gillnets, Captain Dave Timpey, what are some of the other issues that conservationists and recreational fishermen, and I'm going to put them both in the same category
well,
here.
Let's go to the other states, okay? If you look at the other states that have prohibited that type of gear, you'll see that the fishing has gotten a lot better, and that's
not,
all been documented.
Not according to the data, it hasn't.
Okay. Well, yes, according to the data. I don't know what data you're looking at, Sammy, but the data that we are looking at clearly shows that the nets have had a positive benefit economically. I don't want to go there because I agree with Sammy on that. It's not about economics. It's not about commercial guys or recreational guys. It's about the fish. And we need to do something. It's going to be a hard decision to do what needs to be done. And I think that the Conservation and Economic Development Act starts in that right direction. It goes where we need to go.
There are other movements in Raleigh, including something came up around catch shares. And that's something that Senator Bill Rabin, I believe, got a resolution going in the Senate, and that resolution passed officially against catch shares. Dave Timpey.
Let me answer to that. The RFA and I believe the NCFA are strongly opposed to catch shares. It's privatizing a public resource. And
can you just explain what they are? What do catch share programs do?
What they are intended to do is to allocate the resources to a commercial entity. And then they can lease out those resources. So that if you wanted to fish for those resources, then you'd have to provide a fee before you go out and fish for them.
And why is it something that recreational fishermen oppose?
Because you're having to pay for fish that people own. The fish are owned by the people. They're not owned by anybody. They're everybody's. Resource.
Sammy Corbett.
So the way they come up with catch shares is there. Let's say there was 10 people in a fishery, and they take the total of the fishery, and if it was 100,000 pounds, and they say we need to reduce the catch in that fishery by 20%. So that brings them down to 80,000. Then they would allocate those fish to the, if you did it on the commercial side, to the commercial fishery. As a percentage of what, if I caught more than Dave, I would get a little bigger catch share. And he's right, what would happen, we have a catch share system federally in North Carolina on wreck groupers. And that's a fish that they catch way, way off in deep water. And, you know, those people can give their shares to another fisherman who's fishing. But it wouldn't interfere with the recreational fishery. The recreational fishery wouldn't have to buy anything to get a catch share. It would just be the commercial guys, and I don't agree with catch shares, but you know that seems to be a big solution. They have it in the Gulf on almost every reef fish they have, and you know that's the way the feds want to bring it. And that was all federal stuff. That had nothing to do with state stuff.
And Fred Scharf, quickly, you talked about bringing more science to some of these decisions. But if there was one other specific policy that could be implemented that you think would make a big difference in the near term, what would that be?
Well, I don't know if I don't know about a specific policy, but you know, I've been here for 15 years, and I've been involved in state fisheries management the entire time. And one of the things that has appeared to me is that there's just less participation by the fishing groups in a constructive way than there used to be.
So we need more dialogue.
We do. And it needs to be productive and
more
objective.
Dialogue and more science.
Right.
That's this edition of Coastline. Sammy Corbett, Fred Scharf, Dave Timpey, thank you all so much for joining us today. Thanks also to David Sneed and Glenn Skinner. Coastline's executive producer is Cleve Callison. Producer is Isabel Shepherd. Technical director is Ken Campbell. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org. Get the podcast on iTunes. Find us on the HQR app or old school. Tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 3. Join us for Coastline Live, Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon here on HQR News 91.3 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.